Thank you. Today I'd like to talk about some exploring causality in the brain or curved surface in the asymptotic Eddie spacetime by considering some holographic scattering. So this is based on the work which is on the archive and also published in JHEP with Benny. All right, so I guess you guys might be familiar with those kind of things, but let me talk about the motivation, why I'm interested in studying brain or cutoff surfaces. So the term brain appears in several contexts. So like in string theory, people have been discussing deep brains and so on. And in quantum cosmology, we use the brain to trying to realize our universe on the brain, and called the Randall-Sundrum brain world. And finally, recently, people are discussing the brain in the context of holography to consider quantum gravity and it's incorporating quantum information on perspective. So, so especially in this double holography, people consider bulk and the boundary, which is just a usual Eddie CFD story. But in addition, we add a brain and consider some brain coupled to a bath system. And this has been discussed in the double holography. And this is something I'm going to work on, and I'm going to talk in this 1 hour. And this is just for application. This double holography is useful to discuss, for example, black hole evaporation and deriving page curve. That's one of the application. So anyway, this brain and also the cutoff surface, which where we impose a different boundary condition other than this brain, it's very useful to consider some generalizing holography to some non-asymptotic boundary. But for this kind of brain world system, it has been known that there are some subtleties with this brain system. So ultimately, we want to consider some quantum mechanical theory living on the brain or cutoff surface in the asymptotic Eddie spacetime. But if I consider it such a kind of theory, it has been pointed out that there are some subtleties or some unwanted features. So like one of the things is like non-locality or superluminality. And also we can see some violation of subadditivity, and especially subadditivity, we think the subadditivity must hold for any quantum system. So we have to understand, or at least we have to explain why there is a violation of subadditivity, or maybe this violation can be avoided. Then how can it be avoided? So from these motivations, so what we like to consider here is trying to examine the causality, which is a dynamical feature of the spacetime on the brain or cutoff surfaces, by inspecting the scattering and entanglement in the bulk and using some techniques from quantum information. All right. So I guess this is just some. I guess almost everybody knows about this very well, but let me recap Eddie CFD correspondence in one slide. So in holography, it's known as Eddie CFD correspondence. There are two equivalent descriptions. One is a D plus one dimensional asymptotic Eddie spacetime described by general relativity. And the other equivalent description lives on the boundary, which is d-dimensional and described by conformal field theory, which is just a quantum system. So the essence is so the time goes up, and if there is some scattering process or some phenomena in the bulk, there must be a dual description in this case, a unitary description in terms of boundary evolution. So this is how ADS safety works. So if there is some scattering process in the bulk, there must be some corresponding evolution on the boundary. And this is a also well-known fact. So like, I forgot, maybe a few decades ago, so the Ray Takanagi and also other people developed a holographic entanglement formula, where so we can define an entanglement entropy of a single time slice given some subregion A to the quantum field theory. And then using a holographic dictionary, we can describe this entanglement entropy in terms of some geometric quantity that is the area of this extremal surface. And for G Newton, it's just a parameter of the theory. So anyway, this is how we how this quantum informational quantity entanglement entropy is calculated in terms of geometrical quantity. So okay, so that's basically two slides review of holography and some entanglement entropy in holography. So now I'd like to talk about what is a double holography and also the cutoff surface. So let me briefly recap what's going on there. So the setup is as follows. So first of all, let me explain the bulk perspective. So here we have asymptotically ADS spacetime. And usually, so this is shows us a single time slice of the asymptotic ADS spacetime. And in the absence of the brain, which is given by this red curve, this is just asymptotic ADS spacetime. But now we consider some bulk which has two kinds of boundaries. One is the asymptotic boundary. Given by this blue curve, and the other boundary is given by this red curve, which we call the end of the wall brain. And on this end of the wall brain, we impose a Neumann boundary condition. So by Neumann boundary condition means we don't fix the metric on this brain. So we have to solve this Neumann boundary condition to determine the brain configuration dynamically. But anyway, so this is a kind of generalization of holography, because in the original holography, we consider bulk and the asymptotic boundary, and the boundary describes a quantum dual quantum system. But here, the boundary is actually, it has some non-asymptotic boundary, which is gravitating. And in the ADS BCFT correspondence proposed by Takanagi, says there is a dual quantum mechanical description which is given by the boundary CFT, BCFT. So here, the boundary is given by the theta equals zero and theta equals minus pi. And this boundary degrees of freedom basically accounts for this red brain degrees of freedom. So this is something kind of generalizational holography. I mean, holography with a boundary. But now, when we talk about double holography, there is a third picture. So the third picture is we don't consider the bulk, but we consider a brain plus this asymptotic boundary. And we regard this Q plus sigma as a quantum mechanical system. So here, the sigma is just on the asymptotic boundary with a fixed metric. Here, we impose the Dirac boundary condition. So this is just a non-gravitating bath. And here, as I said, this is dynamical. So there is a gravitating quantum field theory living on the brain. In this talk, we're going to focus on this kind of system. So we consider a quantum system living on some surface in the asymptotic ID spacetime, but not necessarily at the asymptotic boundary. And also, there is a different setups called the cutoff ADS. So here, on the brain, we impose a Neumann boundary condition. But now, in cutoff ADS, we can instead impose Dirichlet boundary condition and consider just arbitrary shape of cutoff surfaces in the asymptotic ADS spacetime. And you may ask, what is a dual quantum system living on this cutoff surface? One example is given by these people called T-T-Bird deform CFT. And we don't talk about this detail, this quantum mechanical systems, but something we focus on this is just this kind of profile. I mean, so here there is a, so we consider quantum system plus on the Q plus sigma, and here we consider a quantum system living on this Cauley Q. And since this is different from the usual holography, where we define a quantum system on the asymptotic boundary, so something we should ask here is, does a quantum theory living on this brain or cloud surface really make sense or not? And here, we try to preserve locality on the locality of the theory, as well as the validity of the holographic entanglement entropy formula. But if you have any questions for those aspects, I have an extra slide, so I can show you. But yeah, for now, let's assume that. And since this is a quantum informational theorem, and actually, I don't talk about the quantum information aspect so much here. But anyway, let me try to make it a big quantum information theoretic. So a particular useful picture, this kind of brain world holography or cutoff ADS holography is a tensor network picture. So here we basically consider some random tensor network covering a hyperbolic space. Hyperbolic space. This is a single time slice. And so like originally, like originally like proposed by Swingle, we can consider toy model holography by considering hyperbolic tensor network like this. So the green curve denotes the open legs where we can define a wave function of the CFT. And as for the BCFT, in order to reproduce entanglement, holographic entanglement entropy formula for ADS BCFT correspondence, we have to make a projection by a separable states on the brain. And then and the legs for this curve on the asymptotic boundary are left open. So this describes a BCFT wave function. And now we're going to consider these two middle pictures. So the this picture basically corresponds to this picture, and the second picture corresponds to this picture. So we basically just remove some of the tensors in the asymptotic this tensor network, and just consider a portion of tensor network to define a wave function. And in this tensor network picture, it seems that this this is just a same as the this one. I mean, the, in a sense that this can define a wave function, just a quantum obeying a quantum mechanics. So so we are motivated by this picture. So even in the original holography, I mean the double holography or cutoff holography, the quantum mechanical description should be there living on this surface. However, as I said, there are some subtleties regarding this causality and entanglement on this brain or kind of surface. So let me describe these puzzles, and I will discuss how these puzzles are actually resolved. So the first one is so-called connective wedge theorem. And this is originally proposed by Alex here. So the connective wedge theorem basically says if there is some bulk scattering process, but there is no direct scattering is possible on the boundary, then if I consider certain subregions on the boundary, the entanglement wedge for those certain subregions must be connected. And it's not really obvious whether this connective wedge theorem can extend to this generalized case with some considering the surface in the bulk. And if I naively consider this theorem, actually we can show that wedge is not connected. But actually this connective wedge theorem is spotted from the quantum information argument by considering non-local realization of quantum task on the boundary. So it's actually a puzzle. Why? If we believe there must be a quantum mechanical description on the brain or the cutoff surface, then the connective wedge theorem must be true, but it seems not. That's a puzzle. And the second puzzle is there is a violation of subadditivity, also a strong subadditivity on the brain and the cutoff surface. And since any quantum systems must satisfy subadditivity, so this violation is also a puzzle. And the third puzzle is, this may not be a puzzle, but so on the brain or cutoff surface, if I consider sending a signal from one point to another point, then actually you can see that even if these points are space-like separated, you can indeed send a signal from one to there. So it seems that this is a different from the usual quantum system, in a sense that it can violate causality. And that's so if I try to preserve the causality, then this can be a one puzzle. So these are puzzles I'd like to resolve. And our proposal is a so-called induced Lycon, which I will explain shortly. And with this induced Lycon, we can show connective wedge theorem, and also this induced Lycon kind of modified the causality so that we can show the subadditivity, and also we can give some physical interpretation of this egg causality. Okay, so far so good. All right, so first of all, let me focus on the first puzzle. So in order to explain first puzzle, let me review the connective wedge theorem. Roughly speaking, connective wedge theorem states that there is a scattering in the bulk, then there must be a large entanglement on the boundary. So okay, here's the setup. So we consider the case where there is a direct scattering in the bulk, but the case where the direct scattering is not possible on the boundary. So let me explain, let me give you an example. So this is a time slice of ADS, and we consider sending a signal from C1 and C2 and scatter at the middle, at the center of the ADS. So at t equals zero, signal is prepared locally. And then after pi over two time, these signals can meet at one point in the center of ADS. And then they scatter off to R1 and R2, which is also which are also points on the asymptotic boundary. So in order to have a bulk scattering process, at least we need a pi time to have this scattering process. And since we consider scattering from the boundary points to the boundary points, so we should be able to explain the this scattering process in terms of boundary dynamics. However, so this is a causal picture of this boundary spacetime. So C1 and C2 are here, and R1 and R2 are here. And this orange region is an intersection between the path domain dependence of this R1 and R2 and the future domain dependence of either C1 or C2. So like if I focus on this orange region, here the observer in this orange region can receive a signal from C1 and the same information both to R1 and R2. And here, observer can receive information from C2 and send information to both R1 and R2. This is a definition of the orange region. And you can see these two orange regions don't overlap to each other, which means we cannot receive the information from C1 to C2 simultaneously and then send information to R1 and R2. This is not possible. But this is something happening in the bulk. So in the bulk, we can bring these C1 and C2 together at one point and then scatter off to R1 and R2. But on the boundary, we can send signal from C1 to R1 and R2, also C2 to R1 and R2, but you cannot bring it at one point. So the causal network in the bulk and the boundary are different. And this seems to be a contradiction. So like, let's say we consider sending a qubit and scatter, and then R1 and R2, Alice and Bo again receives a quantum, again receives a qubit. Then you can apply some unitary in the bulk when they scatter off. However, here it seems that since you cannot apply the unitary on C1 and C2 outputs R1 and R2, so the question is how to implement this kind of unitary. And so a couple of years ago, what Alex said is so we can non-locally implement this unitary. In particular, if we consider some cryptographic task called B84, and any time sending signals any times, then we can show that this unitary can indeed implement non-locally on the boundary if there is a large entanglement shared between these two systems. And here, these two systems correspond to this R1 and causal diamond of R1 and R2. So if there is a large entanglement, larger than order one, between those R1 and R2, then indeed we can realize this kind of unitary process in the bulk. So, since we believe holography, so it must be true. And this large entanglement in holography, I mean the geometrical realization of this large entanglement between those two subsystems is given by this connected entanglement wedge. Because mutual information larger than order one implies that mutual information must be order 1 over g Newton. So from this, by considering some certain quantum task and its non-local realization, then we need to have a large entanglement, and geometrically, this large entanglement is realized as a connected entangled wedge. So this is a statement of connected entangled connected wedge theorem in the usual ADS-CFT story. Okay, so far so good. Okay. All right. So the our first goal is to derive, or I mean, the confirm this connected wedge theorem for a general. Confirm this connected wedge theorem for generalized holography, in a sense that the boundary theory is not living on the asymptotic boundary, but on some surface in the bulk. And now there is a puzzle. So now we considered this kind of 2-2-2 scattering, as I showed before. So this bluish surface is a brain, and this light, is it a blue or purple? Anyway, this shows a asymptotic boundary. And we send a signal from the either brain or asymptotic boundary and scatter off. And one particular example is this one. So we consider some brain and the asymptotic boundary, and we consider sending a signal from the brain and also sending a signal from asymptotic boundary and scatter off to R1 and R2. And you can, similarly, you can consider Q, the brain coupled to a box system. This is a the boundary picture. In a sense, the boundary is a brain and a bath. And you can consider just a causal diamonds according to the standard causality. But now you can see that this R1 is very small compared to the original, previous slide. So this one, R1 and R2 has the same size, but here R1 is very small. And actually, if I compare holographic entanglement entropy for this one, and if I consider entangled wedge, actually these two entangled wedges are disconnected. So from this holographic entanglement entropy formula, and from this standard causality, it seems that there aren't enough entanglement between R1 and R2 to accommodate this holographic scattering. So there is a contradiction.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. How is the entangled wedge for the non-asymptotic boundary is constructed? Like, see? Yeah.
You mean this one? So here we think we assume the holographic entanglement entropy is valid even for the brain subsystem.
Geodesic.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So so obviously the difference coming from this R1, and this is basically determined from this C1, and C1 basically says the location of the signal emanated from the brain. So we need to reconsider what is what should be the causality associated with this signal C1. And here comes our proposal. So recall that in the standard holography, everything is determined on the asymptotic boundary. So let's try to define this signal emanated from the brain in terms of asymptotic excitation. So now we consider some fictitious ADS spacetime behind the brain, and then we can have a fictitious asymptotic boundary. And now we consider some localized excitation on this fictitious asymptotic boundary. Recall that here we consider localized excitation on the brain, but now we consider localized excitation on this fictitious asymptotic boundary. And then So if I ignore the brain, this basically describes a signal just traveling through the bulk. So this actually determines induced lycon, which has a modified causality, as described in this slide. So localized excitation on the brain or localized excitation on the asymptotic boundary has actually a different causal structure. So if I consider localized excitation here, so basically what we are doing here is this surface describes a propagation of a lycon. So we can draw a lycon in the bulk. And if I consider a local point in the bulk, then the lycon is just 45 degrees. So this, so in order to have this R1 region, we need this time duration. However, if I consider a localized excitation on this region behind the brain, then this is a constant time intersection for the lycons emanating from this C1 tilde. And if I consider the intersection of this bulk light cone with this brain, the induced lycon on the brain has this kind of superluminal structure. So if I consider the same size of this subregion R1, we can have this subregion in the induced lycon faster than the standard lycon. So in this sense, by considering induced lycon, we are kind of modifying the causality in a sense that this lycon is now 45 degrees.
So is there lots of C1 twiddles you could have chosen?
Sorry?
Is C1 twiddle specified uniquely in this prescription?
Yeah, that's a good question. And actually, you can arbitrarily choose a C1 tilde. So like you can fill the, like, you can also consider this since this region behind the brain is just fictitious, so this could be a non-ADS spacetime. But for simplicity, we are choosing this C1 tilde by considering filling by just asymptotic ADS spacetime.
But I mean, let's say you assume it's you assume it's pure ADS.
Mm-hmm.
Is it then unique which C1 twiddle to choose?
So the C1 tilde is actually not unique. So this basically just saying after penetrating this brain, the dual signal must propagate like this. But before that, the trajectory can be arbitrary. So this C1 tilde itself is not unique. But actually, this induced lycon is unique. And one possible example, maybe I can, is like this. So, oops. So here we consider C1 tilde, and this is an induced lycon. And this is C1. But if I consider this antipodal point and then try to extend a lycon backwards in time, then you can still define the induced lycon. So in this construction, you can see that induced lycon is just determined from the bulk, which is now fictitious. But if I consider just sending a signal by a fictitious point, then you can, for instance, just consider C1 tilde, which can be a possible C1 tilde. And let's say going the trajectory like this, which is still time-like. And then after this point, this can follow the same trajectory. And since this is a kind of weird tracing out this system, so it doesn't matter what kind of trajectory you should choose to define this fictitious excitation.
Okay.
It's just, yeah.
Like C1 twiddle twiddle.
Yeah.
Would, I mean, there's a causal curve from that point to C1, but mm-hmm. the like the intersection of its light cone with the brain would be totally different.
Right. Yeah. 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 So
it does seem like you have to choose the right one.
Let's see. Yeah, we've discussed in that paper briefly. Let's try to recall that. Yes, and let's see. Yeah, so there, okay, so the statement we want to show here is the connected wedge theorem. And even if you consider some excitation other than this one, you can still show the wedge is connected. And actually, if you consider this excitation and consider induced light cone, this becomes larger than the original induced light cone. And actually, I should say this is not a light cone because this goes a time-like trajectory. So it's like, basically, it's kind of, so this is, let's say, this is a, in the standard causality case, this is a usual light cone, and this is a light cone on the path, from the pass point. And we consider some time-like trajectory like this. And still, so if I consider, let's see. Let's see. So, yeah. Well. Yeah. So the point is, even if you consider the past, so the although we don't talk about this in the presentation today, but in the paper we gave a general proof for the connected wedge theorem, and there we only assume that the domain dependence, a bulk domain dependence, has an intersection from the future receivers, and also the future domain dependence for this fictitious excitation here. So we don't really assume that this must on. So the we only assume that this thing has a finite support. So we don't really assume this fictitious excitation must be defined in this way. So this is a kind of arbitrary. Yeah. Maybe we can discuss later. Okay, so all right, so if I consider the fictitious excitation like this, then we have this kind of superluminal, seemingly superluminal light cone. And with this induced light cone, so we basically, we roughly speaking, it's modifying causality, so that it defines a larger R1. And now we can show that this with this larger R1, we can indeed show the entanglement wedge are connected. So we see that this induced light cone is essential to make the connected wedge theorem true for this generalized holography, which generates a boundary.
Question?
Yes.
How to understand this kind of superluminal thing mm-hmm. like without those kind of fake ADS? Mm-hmm. What does that mean physically?
So the physically, I will talk that in the last slide, but the roughly speaking, so here we consider local excitation on the brain, but here we consider local excitation in the fictitious region. So we can interpret this as a kind of doing some state preparation before just considering an instant state preparation by local excitation. Yep. I think it's an interesting question to consider some this kind of excitation in the quantum metabody time models. But this is something we are not really sure at this point. Okay, so So with this induced lycon, we can show the connected with theorem. And for general surfaces, like a cutoff surface, inhomogeneous cutoff surface, we can show this too by considering some focusing theorem. But for now, let me skip this detailed derivation. You can look at my paper. And now, let me move on to the second puzzle. So in the second puzzle, I said there is a violation of subadditivity. And now we can show that this with this induced causality, actually subadditivity is valid. So for simplicity, let me consider this tensionless brain, which is just brains like this and just lying on the Z2 symmetric line. And now let me consider two subsystems on the brain. And since the geodesic just lying on the brain, so if I compute the holographic entanglement entropy for these subsystems, SA plus SB just equals the SAB. So, so even before boosting, this A subsystem A and B saturates the subadditivity. Then we can to consider examine subadditivity. Let me boost this subsystem AB. And by so the you can boost the subsystem within this causal diamond, and within this causal diamond, boost is just a unitary operation on A and B. But after boosting, the subsystem A transforms the subsystem A prime, which has a shorter proper distance, and subsystem B prime has a shortest proper distance. So actually, this SA prime plus SB prime is less than SA plus SB. And in general, this SA plus SB is larger than or, sorry, smaller than or equal to SAB. And since this is a unitary operation, this doesn't change after deformation. So this clearly presents the violation of subadditivity on the, for the subsystems on the brain. But as I said, the subadditivity must be true for any quantum systems. So we had to explain why it happens. And our explanation to this violation of subadditivity is coming from this modificational causality. So this is orange region is described by this induced lycons. And within this induced causal diamond, we can, in general, we can prove that subadditivity and strong subadditivity holds. And in the tensionless limit described here, actually, this induced causal diamond just collapses. So any infinitesimal boost is actually not a boost because it's just out of induced causal diamond. So this is a resolution to the subadditivity. So we need to consider not the standard causality, but we need to consider induced causality. And then within this induced causal diamond, subadditivity holds. All right? OK, so finally, related to this part is related to your question, but the so in the induced lycon, we can see that the causality is superluminal. But let me ask a question. Is the superluminarity is real or apparent? And to consider this question, let me again consider some problem proposed by Omiya and Wei. So, if I consider double holography, in particular the brain coupled to the bath system, it seems that the signal can travel faster by considering a bulk shortcut. So here in the tensionless limit, if I try to send a signal from 1 to 3, in the bulk it takes pi over 2. But on the boundary, by boundary I mean by brain coupled to a bath, we have to signal must travel go 1 to 2 and 2 to 3. But now this takes a pi over 2 and this takes a pi over 2, obeying a standard by assuming standard causality. So this means the boundary time is larger than the bulk time. And this is contradictory to the Gauvois theorem, which stating that there must be no shortcut in the bulk. So it seems that this superluminal signaling is also puzzling, assuming the brain and the bath system are local. And one resolution by Omi and Wei is they propose that this is basically the consequence of non-local coupling, or in their terminology, by the microscopic wormhole. So here they think that if there is a non-local coupling between 1 and 3, then with this non-local coupling, microscopic wormhole, the signal even in the brain coupled to a bath system, signal can be sent from 1 to 3 in this pi over 2 time. And of course, this can be a possible resolution. However, I think this is a bit unlikely in a sense that this really needs a fine tuning of a non-local coupling of the theory. So like there is some other examples we should consider. Like, so this is the first example I showed, but you can also consider this case, sending a signal from the same point to the other point on the asymptotic boundary. And in the bulk, this takes exactly the same time, but on the boundary, if this is possible by superluminal propagation, but now this distance, proper distance is shorter than this proper distance. But even that, the bulk time duration to send a signal from there to there must be the same. So this means the non-local coupling must be really fine-tuned so that this relevant microscopic wormholes depends on the direction of the signals. Instead, since we propose an inducer lycon, so we try to explain this by in terms of inducer like within the inducer lycon formalism. So in the inducer lycon, we consider a fictitious excitation behind the brain. Then this direction dependence is basically just a consequence of where to put this fictitious excitation on this asymptotic boundary. And also this superluminal propagation is basically explained by this superluminal lycon of the inducer lycon. So this is how it explained, but still there seems to be some puzzling feature. So it seems that inducer lycon allows a superluminal signaling. However, by these people, it has been shown that there cannot be a superluminal propagation on the brain. But here, it seems that there is a superluminal propagation on the brain. But if I compute the commutator of the space-like separate points on the brain, then actually it vanishes. So this means the microcausality is still valid. And here, we give a physical interpretation to this one. So actually, the information is not traveling along this inducer lycon. So there is no violation of causality. But instead, since we are preparing this excitation due to this signal by considering this fictitious excitation, so in order to In order to reach this fictitious excitation to the brain, we need to have a finite time, which corresponds to the time needed to prepare the state due to this signal emanated from the brain. So there is no violation causality and there is no supraluminal signaling, but it's just information is non-locally shared before signaling due to the finite time state preparation process. Okay, so here is the summary. So we consider, we propose an induced light cone, and with this we can prove a connected wedge theorem with a generalized boundary, and also we can show that subadditivity holds, and also the supraluminal signaling is actually apparent, and this can be understood as a state preparation process without giving up the locality of the theory, as well as the validity of holographic entanglement entropy formula. And in other words, this indicates incompatibility between those two notions. If I if I assume the validity of holographic entanglement entropy formula, it should allow this radially propagating excitation in the bulk, as well as the excitation on the brain. But if I just take the standard causality, this is incompatible with the holographic entanglement formula. And the standard causality only allows the local excitation on the brain, which just propagates on the brain, which we call trapped excitation. Okay, so here's the summary, and that's the end of my talk. Thank you.
So I guess, so there's these three pictures. There's like the usual, the like fundamental picture of the CFT. Mm-hmm. And there's a bulk picture, which would include a brain in it. And then there's like the doubly holographic picture.
Yes.
Where we try and talk about just, you know, basically like, yeah, the endpoints of the CFT, the boundaries of the BCFT, describing the brain, and then the CFT viewed as the rest of the CFT viewed as some path. And I guess, like in the past, people would have said that picture makes sense in a limit where I take a large tension and I push my brain to the boundary, and then, you know, basically you're trying to make sense of that picture away from that limit.
Yes.
And yeah, I guess I'm a sort of general question about the attempt to do that is like, I guess like from the first picture, like we know that the brain is described like within the CFT.
Mm-hmm.
And here, like we're trying to treat the stuff on the brain as like an independent system.
Yes.
And so those are like directly in tension pictures. And okay, I guess it sort of starts making sense at large tension, but I guess it's unclear to me why it should make sense to discuss this at finite.
Yes. First of all, in double holography, yes, even unless you take a large tension limit, graviton doesn't localize. So yeah, that's what people have discussed. And so like, but my first comment is, even if you take a large tension limit, if you allow slightly, if you allow infinitesimal, if I allow the tension to be infinitesimal away from the t equals one, then you can still see the violation of subadditivity.
Yeah.
So there could be a still problem, but one may argue that if you allow the non-locality on the brain QFT, then maybe we can explain this violation subadditivity just from the just saying this is out of the range of effective theory on the brain. But this is the non-trivial. I mean, whether this scale of the violation effective theory and the scale where the subadditivity is violated is are equal or not. And here we take we try to assume the locality of the theory. But the paper by Dominic and Manu try to pursue the formal approach, and the so the, in the BCFT, if I consider BCFT picture, yes, the brain system is not really independent from the CFT described on the asymptotic boundary. But basically, this is described by the boundary degrees of freedom, the boundary CFT. And I'm not quite sure if this is a right way to describe that, but roughly speaking, you can try to if I start from the 2 CFT, which is coupled by this interface, and then try to integrate this CFT out and just describe this entire degrees of freedom as a boundary degrees of freedom. So we are trying to go in the opposite way. So they're trying to stretch this boundary and try to describe as a brain. Yeah, so that's something we are trying to do. And in the tensor network picture, we can indeed do this kind of thing by just opening the legs across the brain. And away from this brain story, we can still consider cutoff surface. So just trying to cut the internal bonds of the tensor network to define some smaller tensor network, defining some new wave function. And for the, as for the cutoff surface story, we know that TT bird deforms CFT as an example.
Any other questions? All right, if not, so this lecture in the bistro, we have a table reserved, and let's thank Tiago again.
Thank you.